Okay, tonight we have our second letter to the church, and it's to the church at Smyrna. I think just three verses, isn't it? Very short letter. It is the shortest of the seven letters. And I know that you've all read it many times this week, and you've analyzed it. But just in case there's one here that didn't read it, would somebody other than the Good News Bible read our message, which would be Revelation 2, and I think starts with verse 8. Read the entire letter to the church at Smyrna.
To the angel of the church in Smyrna. Right. These are the words of him who is the first and the last, who died and came to life again. I know your afflictions and your poverty, yet you are rich. I know the slander of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Do not be afraid of what you are about to suffer. I tell you, the devil will put some of you in prison to test you, and you will suffer persecution for 10 days. Be faithful, even to the point of death, and I will give you the crown of life. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes will not be hurt at all by the second death.
Okay. Now, how many of you would love to be in the church in Smyrna and get this letter? Pretty uplifting? Good news? Wished it had return postage on it, return date, address. Not a good letter in a way. But of all the letters, in a way, it's the highest compliment to any of the seven churches. Now, how can that be? So let's get in and let's start looking at it. First of all, remember we talked about how that the seven churches made a semicircle. Well, this church is about 40 miles north of our last church, which was Ephesus. It's by the bay, and of the seven churches, it's considered absolutely the most beautiful. Now, y'all were at Ephesus. Have been to Ephesus. Have you been to Smyrna?
Most of these churches.
Have you been to Smyrna?
Yes. Yeah, we did 6 and 7.
Yeah. Well, it's considered at that time the most beautiful of the seven churches. It's by a seashore. It just has beautiful gardens and crops. And the city's kind of interesting because it was devastated militarily, torn apart, and it literally for 400 years just laid in shambles. And then some rich people came in, probably Republicans, and they came in and rebuilt the city and built the roads, and it was actually a planned city. And so that's why it was created so beautiful and just very gorgeous. So it was known all throughout as a city to be desired to see. It had about 200,000 population in AD 95, and this is when John wrote the letter. It had several of the very famous leaders of the churches lived in Smyrna, and we'll come across those in just a few minutes. It was lots of Christians, but they were very poor. If you were a Christian, you were poor. There was generally two reasons. Number one, if you did not pay homage to Caesar, then a lot of times in Smyrna they'd just take away with whatever you had. And number two was the Jews. Now remember at this time there is a difference between Christians and Jews. And the Jews in AD 95, they hated the Christians because they were an embarrassment to them. And so they persecuted and tried to undo the Christians all the time. So we find most of the Christians that lived in Smyrna had very little money, and they were considered against the empire and thus highly persecuted. So let's begin here. And so he says, to the angel in the church of Smyrna write, the first and the last, who was dead and has come to life, says this. Now, we've seen this in chapter 1, but let's review. First and the last, one who was dead and rise. Who's that referring to?
Jesus.
Yeah, obviously it's referring to Christ. So here's a message revealed from Christ through John. All right, somebody read verse 9. Very slowly.
I know with absolute clearness your tribulation and poverty.
Keep going.
But you are wealthy.
Okay, let's stop there. I know of your tribulation. I know of your poverty. But you are wealthy. Now, the tribulation came from the persecution of not only the Romans, but the Jews themselves. The poverty, as I've already mentioned, absolutely, these were people that did not have very many goods. But yet, he starts off by saying, I know you are rich or wealthy. What does your other versions have for that?
Rich.
Rich. Rich. How can that be?
They were rich in the way they believed in God and worshipped.
Okay.
They were firm and their foundation must have been firm.
Okay. What other insights? Is this an encouraging statement to these people?
Affirmation.
Is it a comforting statement?
It's all for you.
Yeah, how many times have you been down and out and somebody comes along and says, I know you're down and out, but count your blessings. Pardon? What? Was that your inner voice that spoke out? No, what did you say?
It was my inner voice. Daddy, you want to punch him out. Oh. Count your blessings.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we're supposed to do, but, you know.
Yeah.
You don't want to necessarily have somebody
to
tell you that.
Yeah. Sometimes that's not the most comforting words.
If you do count your blessings, you find that you have a lot more than you thought you would ask.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Try to balance
your life. Yeah. Well, and Jesus does say in all things, we're to praise. So even in afflictions and...
Well, we're going to come to that in a minute, and we're going to put that one to the test. Yes?
Cross-reference in my Bible.
Okay. It
refers back to...
Matthew?
James.
1-2? 2-1?
2-5.
That's close.
And it rich in the faith and heirs of the kingdom.
Okay. Yeah. Doesn't it depend on what your perspective is?
Always.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, the message that he was bringing them was from Christ himself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so that should be an encouragement.
Now, to quote a good friend of mine over here, do you sometimes want to punch God in the mouth?
Well, I've had arguments with
you. You get angry with God. Sure, God accepts
Pardon?
That. You get angry with God.
Well, certainly.
I've been told you to do that.
Certainly. If you don't bear it, go back and read some of the Bible. Read in David, where he says, I don't know what's going on. But why aren't you out here killing these people? Why aren't you heaving everything you can on them to make their lives miserable? Instead, you're making me miserable. So what's the perspective of the picture for these people? This is why I say it's a high compliment. I'm not real positive I want to be a member of this church. but it's certainly a high compliment. Yes, they were persecuted. And at the time that this letter reached them, they really did not even understand persecution, because we're going to read that in about the next two or three sentences. And they certainly were poor, but John pays them the highest compliment he can by saying, but you're rich, you're wealthy. We'll try to tie that in. All right, keep reading, Jim, the good version. What version is that?
This is Ken West.
Oh, that's right. You use, translation. Yeah, he's not a bad guy. Keep going.
But you are wealthy, and I know with absolute clearness the slander that emanates from those who say they are Jews and are not.
Okay, let's stop there. How would you interpret that one? There's several ways to interpret that sentence. Probably all of them are correct. Let's first of all take probably the literal translation. If you were sitting in the church at Smyrna, that would be most prevalent to you. The Roman law, because it didn't want to create conflict, would not at this time persecute you just because you said you were a Christian. So if somebody come along and said he's a Christian, there's no persecution. So what the Jews would do is that they would make up stories about the Christians and then turn them in to the Roman Empire, and then they would be persecuted, jailed, or beat for different crimes. For instance, Terry here might say that Scott's dog came over into his yard and killed his dog. And therefore, then Scott would be put in jail, fined, or whatever, and Terry would have made up the whole story. So this was very prevalent in that day. Romans knew about it, but they didn't care because they didn't like the Christians either. So when charges were brought, whether they were false or not, just gave them a way that they could persecute, beat, torture, take away property, do whatever they wanted to. So that's one interpretation by saying these people who say they're Jews, children of God, look at the way they're treating your fellow man. Another interpretation, maybe for our day, I think it's a reach, but it certainly still fits, is within our world today, what is most of Christianity looking to Israel for what to happen with Israel? Most of Christianity.
Christ is going to come there, build the temple's going to be rebuilt.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is centered around the Middle East. Israel will be restored. They will come to a place of prominence, and Christ will come there, or the Armageddon will begin there. So that's why most of Christians are wanting to protect Israel, because they think they're going to be restored. Well, if you read in through the book of Paul, I mean, we're told very clearly, I don't know how anybody can miss it, that the nation of Israel no longer existed as God's chosen, and that we all are Israelites. We all are Jews, according to the promise, and that we all are heirs. So a secondary meaning could be here, and the blasphemy by those who say that they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan, could be alluding to the fact that those who say they are of God, children of God, but yet persecute Christianity, undermine Christianity, are really disciples of the devil. So that could fit everybody, because lots of things are done in the name of Christianity and yet are the works of the devil. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So those are the two meanings. Most literal was their particular problem they had in AD 95 was these Jews were just undermining them and doing everything they could against them. Bigger interpretation in our day, but I think it's not primary but secondary, is that there are people who say they do all kinds of things in God's name, but really they're children of the devil. And Jesus said that, didn't himself, when it came time in the Gospels to separate the wheat and all of that? What did he say? I never even knew you. They say, well, we did all of these things in your name. And he says, really never knew you. What a little interpretation of that is, we were never friends. Now let's get down to what I really want to get to tonight. Okay, keep reading. Read from verse, do not. Verse 9.
I'm not individual verse marked here. Let me just, and I know with absolute clearness the slander that emanates from those who say they are Jews, and they are not, but are a synagogue of Satan.
Okay. Now, next ones I'm interested
Stop
in.
Stop being afraid of the things which you are about to be suffering.
Okay, now how, let's stop there and hold there. How comforting is that? I mean, it just said, y'all are being persecuted, y'all are poor, but you're really rich. Read that again. Do not fear, or what you're saying?
Stop being afraid of the things which you are about to be suffering.
Good news there?
I think so.
We got a one, I think so.
If we could really do what it says, it would be great news.
Okay, we'll come back to that one in a second.
Christ is saying, I see your struggle. I see your poverty. Okay. I see the trials that are in front of you.
Okay. And now, if you're a member of the Church of Smyrna, would you stick around or would you move your membership to another church?
That's what those Jews who claimed to be Jews and were not Jews were doing, exactly that, in a roundabout way.
Yeah. Isn't he kind of saying you haven't seen anything yet?
Well, he's saying that the suffering is not over, really. He doesn't say it's going to get worse, really. I mean, he's just saying, because he acknowledges that they're already suffering.
Okay.
He's saying it's not going to stop.
Okay. All right. Keep reading.
Consider this. The devil is about to be throwing some of you into prison in order that you may be tested for the purpose of determining what good or evil there may be in you. And you shall have tribulation 10 days.
Okay. Now, what's the good news in that sentence? Yes, ma'am?
Because I think those days are years.
Okay.
And only, this might sound completely stupid, but I like to know what's going to happen. And if I know ahead of time, then I can sort of mentally...
You're going to cross the street, get hit by a car. You're going to go to the hospital. They're going to drop you off the operating table. And when they pick you up on the way back home, the ambulance is going to run off a cliff and a train's going to run over you.
Well, don't worry, because you have another life.
Yes.
Well, you know, one good news is he says some of you. He doesn't say all of you.
So. Well, see, that's right. So we can always hope it's the Walters, not us. You know. Well, the first good news is, if there is any news, is the 10 days. Now, normally we would say 10 years, you're correct. But in the Jewish mind, 10 days stood for a short period of time. So Daniel 1 talked about, remember the 10-day test that Daniel had? But in the Jewish mind, anything that was short was 10 days. So that's just saying it's going to be a short time. Now the irony of it is, what's a short time? Well, when you're old, short time is shorter than when you're 20. So, but in the great scheme of time, things are... Yeah. Now, does anybody have any questions on anything said in this big long sentence? Because to me, there's some real problems on this one.
Well, when
people, some people are persecuted. They choose a different God to worship if that God is.
Okay. Now, who does Jesus say through John that's doing the persecuting here?
The devil.
Says the devil is.
Right.
Now, why is the devil doing it? What does he say in here?
He says the devil's going to be the one that's doing the testing.
Yeah.
Because obviously, anytime we have a problem, we can all come to imagine this immediately say, well, God's testing me. God's testing me.
Okay.
That's not true. It's the devil
that's
doing it.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
I'm just thinking. It says, about throwing some of you into prison, and, the devil's going to be testing some of you. From what I understand, usually when you are right with the Lord, it's when the devil hits you, hard time and time again.
Okay.
And so could this be like separating, who's truly with God and who is not at the church?
Okay, one way of looking at it. Okay, what about this testing? Who likes to be tested?
The lesson we got before, God warned those that were capable of getting into theological discussions and weeding out the bad guys. But they lost something. They lost that part of their heart that had the tenderness toward their fellow brethren. Now here in this setting, from what we read, when they get this letter and they read it, they're going to say, Jesus understands. He knows where we are. We're poor physically.
Mm-hmm.
But our hearts have that nurturing, nourishing attitude. And when these people are persecuted, when they're put into prison, we're right there. We're with them. We're encouraging them.
Okay.
So
should we look forward to testing?
If it brings that about in our lives, absolutely we should.
Okay. All right, well, let's go through the Bible and see some people who were tested, and then tell me if they had anything in common. First book of the Bible written, generally expected, generally understood, was Job. Job have any tests?
Yep.
Nice one? Happy about them?
No.
Okay. Next part. Pardon?
Again, who tested him?
Well, devil did.
It doesn't matter. Who's testing you is terrible to take.
Doesn't make any difference. If Nathan is sitting here pounding Sue, and I'm sitting in the chair doing nothing, and then I just say, whew, Nathan was the one hitting her. See, we can't take God out of this.
What did he learn? If we're to learn from this test, what did Job learn from that?
Well, we're going to find out in a minute, hopefully.
One thing I keep thinking about, too, when you talk about testing, is when we know we're going to be tested, we have to be prepared.
Okay.
So.
Okay. All right, let's see what these people have in common.
Job didn't know he was going to be tested.
Nobody asked him.
Came out of the blue.
Nobody gave him permission. Didn't say, now Job, you look bored today. See? All right, Joseph. Joseph tested?
Sure was.
Absolutely. Whole life was one. From the time he was thrown into a pit to the time that he got accused of messing around with the wife, time he was in prison and he did everything he's supposed to do and says, yippee-ki-yay, I'm getting out of here, and the guy gets out and doesn't even remember him. Abraham certainly went through the test of all time. How How about the story of nice Elijah and Elisha? Now, you know, Elijah mentored Elisha. He studied under him. Passed his mantle on to him. And how did Elijah die? Not a trick question. Pardon? He didn't. Went to heaven. How did Elisha die? We're told that he died one of the most painful deaths of sickness and ill health and problems as anybody in the world could. How about Isaiah?
He got stuck in a log and sawed in half.
Sawed in half. Now, you can go through a lot of these. Now, the key to the word test in all of this, in my estimation, is John the Baptist. Why did Jesus let John the Baptist stay in prison and some stupid woman with a drunk king lop off his head and serve it on a silver platter? Jesus never came to visit him, never sent him words of encouragement. John the Baptist, who was the forerunner, who was said that there is no, Jesus himself said, there is no greater prophet than John the Baptist. Now, man, that covers a lot. He never saw Jesus heal a person. He never heard a sermon of Jesus. He never saw the happiness that Jesus brought into a sinner's life. And Jesus never visited him, didn't even sing a singing band over to him. Why? Why is this good news for these people? Ignatius, who was the head of the church, he's going to be set into the lion's den and be torn apart. Polycarp, who personally knew John, who became head of the church, they're going to take him and beat him and tie him to a stake and burn him to death. And these were two of the people that are sitting right here in this church. Another one's Timothy, who was nearby, and 2 years after this was written, Timothy's going to be beaten to death with clubs and die 2 days later. What does this have to do with John the Baptist and us?
There aren't very many of us that have suffered to that extent, or
What did Job, Abraham, Joseph, Isaiah, John the Baptist, what did these all have in common?
Faithful to God.
Great relationship with God.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They were witnesses who had a relationship with God. And John the Baptist was the greatest of these. And God allowed Satan to do what he wanted to do with these people. So the unfallen worlds could see him, what he would do when he was unleashed. But this is the most important. We're told that at this time in John the Baptist's life, as he sat into that prison, remember he was sitting there thinking, you know, your deal about my punch. What did he say? Man, is this really the Messiah? So he called two disciples over and said, think it is, but go check it out. And hey, just ask the guy, are you the one? And Jesus said to him, hang with me for a day. He never said, read your Bible, go back and read your scriptures. He just said, hang with me a day. And they came back and they told John what they had seen. They saw the sick healed, children happy, sight to people's eyes, sinners released from sin. And from that moment on, John the Baptist sat there, knowing he was facing death. And it said that the angels of heaven were as close to him as they possibly could be. And as he read, they took John the Baptist as he studied the Old Testament and shared with him what was happening. He was the closest to God as he could be as he sat there and waited death. When test comes, if our relationship is with our Father, that's the closest at times we can be to God. And as you go through these martyrs, as you go through these people that took great stands for God, you'll see this in their life. You don't read about any of the people that were martyrs and cared for God and everything being drug into the lion's den. You don't hear them about screaming. What do you see over and over as you see that? That peacefulness, that kindness, that good. Why? Because God allows it to so that we understand that He will never allow us to go through anything that we cannot stand. Because as we do it, He's the closest to us. And then comes the statement right after this from John the Baptist. It's a tremendous statement. I struggle, work with it, believe it, but just work with it. If we could see the end from the beginning, when all things are over, we see the end from the beginning, we would not change one thing that God has done in our lives. It's a powerful statement. These people at Smyrna, they must have been some people. Because, man, the persecution did hit them. Cruel persecution. It lasted for about 80 years. They got two of the most cruelest Roman emperors to come, and he took it out on this city. And so here's a little, very short letter. I know you're going through tribulation. I know you're poor. But my, what a compliment. You're wealthy. Now we're going to find a message to another church that says, you're all wealthy. You don't need anything. Boy, not this church. He says, and suffering is coming. The devil's going to be after you. But how does it end out for them? Somebody keep reading. After 10 days.
Be faithful until death, and I will give you the crown of life. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes will not be hurt by the second death.
Okay. Two principles here. One's not very important, but I think it's interesting. In Smyrna, they had a lot of what we kind of call Olympic-type games. And so anything that was of a value that they could do, they would put a little wreath over your head, a little crown. So if you're in an Olympic contest and you were the victor, you would get this. If you worked for a company for a long time and you were honored, you would get this. If you did anything special in the community. So everybody that was anybody had a little crown that they would wear. So here's what Jesus is saying to these people. you're not going to get that crown on this earth. Because nobody's going to like you. Nobody's going to admire you. No, you're not going to be anything. But man, I tell you one thing. Laid up in heaven, when you get there, the first thing we're going to do is you're getting a crown there. So boy, they related to that crown very quickly. That was special. You know, we talk about crowns. Will there be any crowns and any stars in our crown? You know, and used to try to find somebody, get a star in there. See, we're not talking about that crown, man. We're talking about the crown of victory. So he said to those people, you're not getting one here in Smyrna. Man, you're getting one when you get to heaven. And by the way, what will we do with those crowns? We're going to find out later in Revelation. When we see Jesus, we're going to take them off and throw them at His feet and sing His praises. The last sentence, I think, is very important. He who overcomes will not be hurt by the second death. That's a beautiful, beautiful promise. Why? I don't know why people die. We have prayer. Next Sabbath we come and, you know, Mr. So-and-so that we prayed for? Yes, yes. Well, he passed away Monday. Then we have prayer. You know, Mr. So-and-so prayed? Yes. Man, he's doing great. God's answered his prayers. I don't know those answers. I'd be a fool. But I do know this principle, and to me it's very comforting. And I hope that you would ponder and think about it. God is not as interested in the first death. We're all going to get there. Oh my, how He's interested in that second death. Because that's what He does, everything in His power to draw us to Him. Because that second death is final. Do you understand what I'm saying? I don't know answers on death and why some live and some do. I'm beginning to understand over the last years, the closer you are to God, lots of things happen. But I do know that the first death is not a problem. It's that second one. That's the tough one. And so he says to them, he who overcomes, though you're Ignatius and you get torn up by lions, whether you're Polycarp, by the way, if you ever like to read, go back and read his prayer before he died. One of the most beautiful pieces. I thought about reading it. It's quite long. But you see, you go through that, but you overcome this world through God's grace. Oh my. Second death doesn't affect you. That's what he's interested in.
It makes beautiful sense. And we're really going back to the end of that, the first section that we studied, where he says, I will take that lampstand away from you out of its place unless you have a change of mind.
Yes.
And, you know, just as you say, we pray an awful lot for our physical being. Mm-hmm. But we would really be more benefited many times to pray for that change of mind.
I'll say this publicly. I don't think I'm embarrassed. My house soon, my religious experience is totally different. Would you say that? They're totally different with what she went through. Totally. Am I thankful that she went through it? No. But I know God loves both of us. And if she didn't survive it, I knew He loves us. because it brought us to a realization that spirituality is not a game. It's not the result one way or the other. We came to that beforehand. So I don't know. I know one thing. God will never put any of us through anything that we can't stand. Father in heaven, think we would have liked these people in Smyrna. Wouldn't have been able to go out and eat in fancy places with them because they had no money. But they must have loved you. Because of the seven churches, this one was the one that was persecuted the most. And all you said to them, overcome, get through it, it'll be a short time. Don't worry about this little crown in Smyrna that people wear. My son and my daughter, you'll have a crown of victory forever. And we'll be friends forever. Just get through the short time. Help us, Father, never to lose sight that all you want is us to spend eternity with you. It's the kind of God you are. In Jesus' name, amen.